From WLVR Bethlehem and Lehigh University, this is the show that gets you behind the real lives of Lehigh faculty. This is Prof Talk.
Hello, this is Sarah, and welcome to the spring semester wrap-up session of Prof Talk with Professor Keith Schrey on WLVR Lehigh University Radio. I would like to introduce you all to one of my favorite professors thus far at Lehigh.
She's joking.
Professor Schrey, a very accomplished organic chemistry scholar who has just completed his last semester teaching here. Thank you so much for coming in to chat with me, Professor.
You know she's reading this, don't you?
Hey, don't tell anyone. I was wondering if we could start with you giving me and listeners a brief rundown on who you are in regards to all of your academic life as a student and as a teacher. Like, where'd you go to school? What you studied?
Yeah. Okay. So in high school, I hated math. I didn't like English. Physics had too much math. Chemistry was kind of interesting. So I said, I think I'll do chemistry in college. So I did.
Where was that?
And that was at the University of Portland out in Oregon. I'm from Portland.
Oh, cool.
So in contrast to some of the people listening, you know, nowadays people go and they check out 10 schools and mom and dad come along and all this jazz. So when I did this, I applied to one school, University of Portland. I knew I would get in. I did. I never visited the school until registration day. So it's a whole different scene. Mm-hmm. I mean, partly it was me, but partly it was the times just weren't the way they are now. Anyway, so I majored in chemistry. Again, I was the first, you know, I'm this typical lower middle class family. My dad was a German immigrant, made a mistake, well, plus and minus on that. He came in 1928, which is a terrible time to arrive here, but a great time to leave Germany. Mm-hmm. And eventually met my mom. We did a little cradle robbing because when they got married, he was 29 and she was barely 18.
Wow.
They first dated. I used to give my mom a great deal of trouble about this. They first dated when she was 14 and he was 25. Wow. And I used to tell her, what was grandmother thinking? I would not.
That's crazy.
My kids weren't allowed to date until they were 16. Anyway, so, but they did all right. That was their comeback. Oh, yeah? Well, look how long we've lasted, all right? Mm-hmm. So I had to admit, yeah, they were committed. They were pretty compatible. I didn't see them fight very much. Less than my wife and I have, I think. But anyway, so as another measure of my naivete, I got to be a senior. And my advisor, who was also the dean of the college, so it was a small school, like 2,000. He came up to me and said, so when are you going to apply to grad school? And I said, why would I do that? Mm-hmm. And you can see the level of sophistication, very lacking. Uh-huh. And he said, well, what do you want to do when you get out of here? I said, well, I think I want to teach like you do. He says, well, then you have to go to grad school. So I applied. I went to grad school. I came back to Pennsylvania. I went to Penn State. So I'm still a Penn State football fan. Of course, good. I'm a Lehigh wrestling fan, even though Penn State might be a little better.
My little sister just decided she's going to Penn State. So I'm a little mixed up, too.
Yeah, a little emotionally. Okay. Yeah, anyway, so I applied to a lot of graduate schools. One's in Oregon. Didn't apply to California, they told me. No, don't apply there. They have way too many people already. And don't apply to Washington. They're just biochemistry. So I applied to Big Ten schools, basically, and sort of randomly picked Penn State. And it was a good thing I wasn't smarter about this. You know, nowadays you check out all the faculty that are there and all their interests and all this jazz. But I ended up doing my research with a guy who arrived the same time I did. And it was undoubtedly the best decision I've made in a long time. He was awesome. If I have to be honest, a lot of the really famous profs are not awesome. They are just not good human beings. And he was a great guy. And he became very successful. Mainly because of my work, no doubt.
Oh, of course.
Yeah, right. And he's still a great guy.
Do you see him? Is he
only
alive?
Occasionally. Yeah, he's alive. Like, I went back to his 70th birthday celebration.
Oh, wow. That's fun.
And I was his first PhD. So I kind of bookended with another person who was their last. Well, he's still doing it. He hasn't quit. Even though he must be 74 by now. But anyway, where's my discourse going here?
So you went from University of Portland to Penn State to get your PhD.
Yep.
Did you do anything else, or did you go straight to Lehigh?
Then, if you can't do Lehigh if you haven't done a postdoc.
Oh, that's a good point.
Because we're fairly research intensive. I mean, we're not crazy research like Penn State would be, but. Yeah, you have to do a postdoc. And that was true back then also. So I did a postdoc down at something called the Institute for Cancer Research, which is in Northeast Philly, part of the Fox Chase Medical Center.
Mm-hmm.
And my advisor there, I don't suppose the word would get back to him, was a bit of a moody guy, not the same awesome guy that my old boss was. But nevertheless, we did some nice work, and as a matter of fact, he won the Nobel Prize about 10 years ago. Not for anything that I did for him, but he did, just kind of a little fluky, because it was really out of his area that he was collaborating with some Israelis. Anyway, so that he worked out well for him. And actually, the reason I'm here is because my PhD advisor was a Lehigh alum. And Lehigh was looking for a faculty member. They were looking for a full professor type person. So they asked Bengovic if he'd be willing to come. Well, he wasn't. It's not the same research level that he operates in. Mm-hmm. And then when the search busted out, apparently they couldn't get a full professor. Then they backed up and said, okay, we're going to take some assistant professors. So he recommended them to me. I came, and eventually I got the job.
Oh, that's awesome.
So that gets me here.
Oh, so when was that?
That was in 1972. You know, I like to tell my current students, probably before their parents were born.
Okay.
So when was your parents? When were your parents born?
64 and 67.
Oh, not as bad.
Yeah. So I guess that's been like almost
30. Let's see, coming up on 43.
Wow. You've been here a long time.
I have been here a long time.
All right. Well, so now that we know how impressive you are in the academic field.
Yes.
I mean, it is pretty great that you've gotten all these research and all these really great universities, especially in Portland. I am also very, very, I would say not confused, but just surprised, like happily surprised that you're from Portland, because that place is just so cool.
You've been to Portland?
No. But I have seen the show Portlandia, and it's the dream to go there.
How can you want to go there? That's such a mockery of the place.
Because it's hilarious. Yeah.
I have only seen, I think, one episode of Portlandia, and it's a very granola place now.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't used to be so hippie granola type, but it's always been kind of a maverick place.
Mm-hmm.
For years, we reelected this senator who was just the pain in everyone's side. And we thought, I think that the voters thought, this is a good thing for there to be a senator who is a pain in everyone's side. So they kept sending him.
Oh, goodness. Well, thank goodness he's gone now, right?
Yeah, he's definitely gone.
Okay, so.
Of course, our governor has gotten in a lot of trouble. Our governor. You notice how I still think of myself as from Oregon?
That's good.
I noticed that's true. You'll probably find that yourself. The first time my children called themselves Pennsylvanians, I said, wait, we're not Pennsylvanians,
no.
Even though we'd been here for like 10 years or so. But
did your children grow up in Oregon?
No, they grew up here.
Oh.
Always. I mean, I barely have gotten back to Oregon much.
All right. So actually, why don't you tell us a little bit about like things that students don't know about you? Like, so you're married, you have children. And you're from Oregon, like, I don't know, tell us a little bit about that. I don't know, because, I mean, I really don't know very much, and maybe you should give us the inside scoop of Professor Schrey's personal life.
My personal life, I married a woman that, girl at the time. I married a girl I met at University of Portland. She came from Denver, Colorado. It was kind of ironic because, you know, I was pretty shy around girls. Well, I'm pretty quiet. Most people do not think I'm shy, but I'm a fundamentally shy person. Mm-hmm. They don't think that because I get onto radio shows and do interviews. What am I thinking?
I don't know.
But what I mean is that that's what most people see me as is my teaching, and that's mm-hmm. really a persona that's not fundamentally me. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so I was pretty shy. I didn't date much. We flirted around, but not until our senior year spring. So we were small. She was a math major of all crazy things.
Oh, gross.
Yeah. So I had classes with her. I met her the very first day. You know, when I went to register that day, she was there getting in line to go get registered because he was doing all of the math and science people. Mm-hmm. I even remember what she looked like and how she was dressed. So I guess I noticed because her best friend was there and I don't remember what she was wearing or how she was dressed.
Your wife wasn't must be dressed, very beautiful.
She wasn't dressed like, well, frankly, like girls do today.
Oh, no,
much more
like that.
Conservatively dressed. But anyway, so we had classes occasionally together. But it wasn't until our senior year taking physics that we started palling around. And in the spring, we worked on, of all the romantic things to say, we worked on physics lab reports together. I suppose it was an excuse. But we did. And, of course, I still hadn't asked her out. And she was getting a little annoyed about that, apparently. So my wife's not shy. She's pretty outgoing. So she wrote me a poem about buttercups and how you were supposed to give a girl a buttercup to get a kiss. And so I took that to heart. Again, stupid. I thought buttercups were something you could get at the florist shop.
Oh, goodness.
So I called all these florist shops. I mean, I'm not even sure I knew what a buttercup was. Of course, they didn't have any.
No.
Buttercups. They're a weed. So anyway, I told her I couldn't find any buttercups, but I kissed her anyway. So we must have dated. I would bet we dated 5 times in college. Mm-hmm. Then she went off to, she went off to Peace Corps training. I studied for my graduate exams that were going to be coming. Then we met again in Denver. Then she went off. I went to grad school. We didn't email, needless to say. We wrote letters. You know those pieces of paper where you write stuff on?
I love letters.
Yeah.
Yeah, I went to camp.
I hate letters. I do not like to write letters, but I faithfully wrote like a paragraph a day when I got the paper filled up. It was like this funny airmail letter paper. Then I would send it off. And then I went over in the summer, and I'm embarrassed to say, and I've told her that, but I'm embarrassed to say I do not remember when I proposed to her. She says it was at a certain spot of which we have a picture, and it's possible, but I don't remember. I was probably too afraid to remember.
Where were you?
She was in Ghana, Africa.
Oh, that's
I didn't even know what town that place. That we weren't in a town. We were out at this waterfall. I mean, like, nobody visited this waterfall. Oh. It was on the guidebooks, but to get there, you drove. I mean, the roads were terrible, mm-hmm. and we eventually drove this 2-lane track through the wilderness mm-hmm. to get there. So maybe that's where I proposed to her. I don't know.
Oh, in Ghana? Had you seen her for a while?
Well, no, not for a year.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
I had made up my mind. I actually spent many hours my senior summer writing out, believe it or not, writing out. So what am I supposed to do now? I had a bet with a friend that I wouldn't get married until I was 35. And I had $35 bet on this. That was significant amount of money back then. So I wasn't planning to get married, frankly. Not at all.
35.
Yes, but so I had to convince myself, yeah, well, I think this is probably real, and yep, she's probably the one. Yes, I should do something. So anyway, we did.
So then did you get married after you got your postdoc, or was it like between postdoc?
No, it's at the end of the second year of grad school when she came back from Peace Corps, we got married.
Did she come live with you in Pennsylvania?
Yeah. No, we got married and she stayed in Denver. And I
don't know.
What are you, crazy?
Some people have like long distance.
They do. A lot of the foreign students are married. One member's in Texas and one member's here. It's like, wow, wait a minute. How can you do that?
Yeah, I don't get it.
But anyway, so we got married then and we moved back to Pennsylvania. I drove, on our honeymoon, I drove a 51 Canadian Pontiac, which back then was old even then. And I had another bet with a kid, another person in the lab, that I couldn't make it to Oregon and back without spending more than, it was the magic number again, $35. So the only car trouble I had was that my muffler blew out in Fargo, North Dakota. And I had to fix that, but it was like 30. And it's also true that I drove that. We started having trouble. The car wouldn't. We were in Lake Louise in Banff for part of our honeymoon.
So you did a cross-country road trip for your honeymoon.
Yes, we did.
Wow.
We got married in Denver, went out to Oregon, and then went up through Canada and came back. But I first started having trouble then. I even got it tuned up, but the compression was going so that by the time I got to Pennsylvania, this car could barely get up a hill. I put it in the parking lot, and I didn't touch it until spring. Whereupon, we had to get it started and take it to a junkyard. But I won my bet.
Good.
Anyway, I'm getting a little off on this. So as far as that goes, my wife was told by her Peace Corps physician in Ghana, where she had an appendectomy, that she wouldn't be able to have any children. And so apparently they were wrong about that, because we have 9.
Wow.
Oh, you don't know that. A lot of my students know that.
I was told that you have a lot of kids, but I was never told the exact number.
Well, that's the exact number. And as a result, I have 22 grandchildren and 2 on the way.
Wow, congratulations.
So we have a lot.
That's amazing.
Well, we're just trying to take over the world, that's all.
I would be okay with Trace taking over the world. I would be A-okay with that.
From WLVR Bethlehem and Lehigh University, this is Prof Talk.
All right, so have I supplied enough?
So, 9 kids. How many boys, how many girls?
5 and 4.
5 boys, 5 girls? Mm-hmm. 4 girls? Wow, I can't count. Wow, that's a lot of children. All right, so since you told me all about your like family and whatnot, what about you? Like, what are your hobbies besides organic chemistry?
Actually, organic chemistry is definitely not a hobby. And the truth of the matter is, I have no hobbies.
Really?
Yes, really. I mean, think about that for a minute. I have 9 kids.
That's true.
At some point I said, okay, I'm not spending time on anything unless my kids are involved.
So were you like a soccer coach?
Or? No, I wasn't. My kids didn't do soccer, although all of my, well, that's not true. My youngest son did soccer, and girl number 3 did soccer.
I mean, I don't know, just like a coach, you know?
Yeah,
I
coached grade school wrestling. I helped them build soapbox derby cars because I had done it as a kid. One of my regrets is that I became chairman of the department and was teaching. At some point, I was teaching 420 students in 3 courses. And I used to sleep on the shuttle going up and down the mountaintop because I was so pooped. I didn't build soapbox racers with my last couple. I just did not have time. Mm-hmm. And that's always been a bit of a regret. But it's fun. It gets them to learn how to build stuff. And so they're all pretty willing to tackle projects.
That's pretty cool.
So I used to work with my number three daughter on volleyball. Actually, number four daughter on volleyball. She was a setter, and they made it to, they won regionals but lost at states. So they had a good team. That's a local high school that, and they had a decade of winning regionals around here.
Did you live in Philly? Like, where did you live at this point? Oh, you lived around here?
I live here, yeah. And I lived in Philly for my postdoc.
Okay. Do you have any kids at that time?
Yeah, we already had, we had three before we left Philly.
Oh, cool. Where in Philly did you live? Like, in North Philly?
The Fox Chase is at in Northeast, mm-hmm. kind of at the line between Philly and, there's some suburb that starts with a C whose name I've forgotten.
Conestoga?
No, definitely not.
Yeah,
that.
That's too close to, that's too south.
It, you know, at the level, you know where Abington is?
I think so, yeah.
So there's Abington, and then there's another suburb going east, and then Philly starts, and they were right there. Oh. What was the name of the roads? I mean, Roosevelt was about a mile away. Mm-hmm. That's Route 1. Mm-hmm. Anyway, residential neighborhood.
That's fun. So I know a lot of students like me, I mean, want to just hear about what it was like teaching back like 43 years ago.
It was a little different.
Yeah. I'm just like curious, like, what was it like? Like, what were students like? Obviously they didn't dress so not conservatively, and maybe they actually got up for your 10 a.m. class, which sometimes I could say I didn't make it to. No, I'm just curious.
Yeah, and we weren't videotaping back then.
That is true.
So I started in 72, and my first course that I taught was a graduate level course in enzyme mechanisms, because that's what I had done as a postdoc. Mm-hmm. And so I'm really not a true organic chemist. I don't know what I am. One of my colleagues used to be called me on any kind of chemie. So I've done analytical type stuff, but very bio-oriented analytical. I've done biochemistry. I've done some organic. So I'm not, frankly, a jack of all trades and a master of none.
So you're a chemistry mutt.
Yeah, I'm
a
mutt.
Is that the most mush of chemistry?
Frankly, you don't get famous being a mutt. You have to focus on fields to get enough of a reputation to make a difference. But anyway, for example, one of the things we used to teach in Chandler Ullman, that was the chemistry building. Mm-hmm. And so organic was in the classroom that I don't know what its number is now.
230.
But you know, the funny old desks.
230?
Probably.
The one on the left side, like this side?
The one
this
in,
side?
I'm not sure what you mean by the side.
There's like, you know how it looks like a U?
Yeah.
The one that's closer to Lewis Lab or in the gym, or the
no,
one that's closer?
No, closer to the other way.
That's 230.
Yeah. Anyway, I can remember at some point, we were there until 75, so the number of students taking organic was starting to grow, I think largely because chemical engineering was starting to grow. Mm-hmm. And at some point, our biggest concern was, well, what if the number of students goes above 70?
Oh, gosh.
Because we used to do mimeos. I don't know if anybody knows what a mimeo is. It's a machine that is hand-turned. You make a master. You put it on this thing. And then ink transfers to the papers as you would crank it. Mm-hmm. And it produces, okay copies for a while. But then it starts to fade. So it would be a big crisis if we had to make up two mimeos.
Oh, true.
And it just reminds me of how few students there used to be. Another thing I remember about then was that drop day was like the 12th week.
Oh, gosh. Of,
and anybody who thought they were going to do badly would drop. At some point, I had a class in which 40% of my students dropped.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
That's
numbers.
A lot of students, yeah. Actually.
You didn't need to fail anyone.
Yeah.
I mean, students were pretty intense back then. Now, I mean, I think the students are I think they're as intense. At least the ones in organic are.
A lot of them are. Some of them.
Yeah.
Some of them aren't, I must say.
Right. There are some that are just chilling. I don't know why they're taking organic and, and thinking they can do that. But they were pretty intense, and they were grade conscious, just like people are now, or at least most people.
Yeah.
So I don't think that the students' personalities were different. I actually do believe that the students now are better than they were back then. There's, I mean, it's supported by the statistics of the entering classes. They're stronger than they used to be.
Like we're smarter, we work harder kind of thing?
I think probably smarter, yes. That is, it's not so much that the best of the students are smarter. I don't think that's true. But the number of really smart students is higher than it used to be.
Okay.
We used to get more of a spread. We had more slackers or students who weren't as academically strong.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so what was the funniest thing that anyone has ever asked you in class? Can you think of that? Like something, a really bizarre question that sort of had something to do with chemistry, but... Overall,
did it? There must be something that cracked me up, but I don't think of anything. The funniest thing I ever had, I don't know if it happened to me or if it just happened to my colleagues. And this was back in the day, so if you know your Lehigh history, 72 was the year the girls came. Mm-hmm. And so that was the first class, but some upperclassmen came with that year as well. So, for example, in that first graduate class I taught, there was probably a junior or senior woman taking it. Mm-hmm. But they had obviously a male
dominance in that class, like male
psychology, you know. In my opinion, if you look at frats, they have a male psychology. Mm-hmm. Sororities have a female psychology.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And males left to themselves get pretty extreme. And so the school was
pretty extreme.
I mean, it was extreme in drinking. I mean, as my wife was fond of saying, beer trucks used to drive up the hill and drop off kegs. And the high school kids from all over the valley would come up for free beer. And
I bet.
Yeah, that's not happening anymore. Oh, I don't
definitely not.
Think?
Well, I don't think I've seen any beer trucks, but I have seen trucks of frat boys
with
riding up with like beer, 12 kegs in the back with like five boys sitting on top of the kegs.
Yeah.
So.
I used to have pub nights where beer was flowing. It was a little bit different.
From WLVR Bethlehem and Lehigh University, this is Prof Talk.
But so back to that. So, of course, they were sexist or sex obsessed, as they still are probably.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
So their favorite trick in organic chemistry was, you know, the boards slide up and down. Mm-hmm. So they would get in there before class and post a Playboy centerfold. And then below that, they would write, now that's a pair of enantiomers.
So, oh, my goodness.
But with women arriving, they stopped doing that.
That's so funny, though.
So you see, they have improved a little.
That is, I've thought of that. Like putting a funny joke. No, no, not that. But like putting a funny joke underneath the whiteboard that slides up.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That is a... Clever. I mean, I must say,
I mean, it's relevant to the science, right?
Oh, completely. Oh my gosh.
But I can't really, you know, back to your original question, I can't think of some bizarro question that somebody asked me.
Like, I don't know.
I mean, I had a couple of guys come in tinfoil hats at some point. I don't know what they were doing.
Tinfoil hats?
Yeah, it was some, I don't know what it was. It was a TV show related to a TV show. Mm-hmm. But anyway, so generally speaking, it's either my memory or people don't say funny things in class. Have you heard any funny things in class?
I don't know. Usually people try to be very serious in your class because right. it's very difficult.
Right.
Speaking of which, are our grades up yet?
No, they're not up yet. I've done the grading stuff, but I have a couple of outlier people to take care of, and so I didn't post them yet. I plan to post them today if I ever get off this interview. So it's your fault.
Sorry, everyone.
So, don't worry, they won't be hearing this for years, really.
No, they'll be hearing it on Sunday.
On Sunday?
Yeah.
Oh.
So, what about telling me, you've taught a lot of things besides Orgo. Like, when did you start teaching Orgo?
First semester I was here.
You taught Orgo?
I taught a recitation, so they babied me into the class. So, you know, we have two recitations. Mm-hmm. We used to have a lot. We used to have five when we had 70 kids. So there would be like 15 in a class.
That's nice.
Teaching assistants would teach those. Mm-hmm. And so I was given one of those to kind of baby me into the system. Mm-hmm.
That's pretty cool.
So that first one I taught was enzyme mechanisms, but I also was teaching that recitation. And the graduate students were teaching them, but to be honest, we had really good graduate students, and they did a good job. Mm-hmm. But as the years went by, it got to the point where I didn't have TAs who could teach organic and not do some really wrong things. So I said... And you know, only about half of them come.
Yeah.
And back then it was a two 50-minute lectures and one recitation. So the recitation had to cover new stuff.
Oh yeah.
And as it became the fact that I couldn't find students who knew enough organic to do that, then we would. Then I basically said, okay, we're going to three lectures and we'll do an optional recitation. Mm-hmm. The registrar does not like that. He basically refused to schedule recitations because it would be
that's
a four-credit class.
Yeah.
But it wasn't a four-credit class. But eventually we wore him down, so now he schedules them, but it's still three credits, so it's still optional. You don't have to show up for that. You can't do any grading types of things in there.
I know I can't say I usually go. I usually eat lunch. It was in one of my like all day classes, you know?
Yeah.
So I'm trying to think of some of my best moments in Orgo, and probably one of my favorite times was when you did the ice bucket challenge.
Yeah.
That was hilarious. We were all just so confused at first. We're just like, what is going on? We saw that the video of was it Dean?
The president.
President was Clayton.
Clayton's. I have to say he's at the time I think I said this is a guy who talks the talk and walks the walk, and I eventually sent him a clip, but that line was out because it was too big a file.
Oh yeah.
But I wanted to compliment him on his. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you wouldn't have seen President Gaston.
Oh, definitely not. But it was definitely a sight because we're like, what is going on here? Oh, my goodness. Is he actually doing the ice bucket challenge? We were all freaking out. But it was pretty awesome that he did it. That was one of my favorite parts. So can you tell me of some other stunts you've done? Because that can't be the only one.
Well, of course, I do something at the end of every semester. Although you may...
I saw the one where you dressed up and like, what was the sign you had last semester?
Repent, the end is near.
Yeah, repent, the end is near.
I've done that one for a long time. Mm-hmm. So I usually taught one semester of the pair. I didn't teach both semesters. Mm-hmm. I've only been doing both semesters since about 2000 when I lost the other guy. He moved on. And so I started doing both, and actually I found I really like it a lot better because I can learn the students a lot better. Mm-hmm. It used to be very hit and miss, but then I started I actually taught the lab and the lecture at the same time at some point. I said, holy mackerel, I know where these people are in the lab. I can walk around the lab and memorize who's who. Mm-hmm. And I'll be teaching in both semesters. It'll be worth twice the, I mean, the cost-benefit ratio just mm-hmm. went way down. So I used to do, normally in the end of the second semester, I would do a Yoda routine with Star Wars. And, you know, the Empire Strikes Back and the ACS was the evil empire and things
true.
Like that.
Very true.
Yeah. A year or two ago, when was that? It's possible that was, were you in my class last fall?
Yeah,
or were you
last
in
semester.
Perez's? Did we come in, my wife and I, as Bunsen and Beaker? Was that a year ago?
I think that was a year ago, because I would have remembered that.
So anyway, we did, because my son, my youngest son, makes Muppet costumes for fun. Hmm. What he does is he goes to Halloween events at bars to win the competition for the best. He's won like $500 at a bar with those
goodness.
Costumes. But anyway, for some reason, they were at my house. And so I proposed to my wife that we go in as this pair. So I did a little shtick with that, and she came in, and she didn't have any speaking roles. You know, Beaker just goes beep beep all the time, but she was a good sport about doing that.
That's so fun.
Somebody, of course, took a picture, and I'm not quite sure. You know, I don't quite get how Reddit works.
It was posted on Reddit.
They posted it on Reddit, and then I guess. I don't quite understand. So do all the images on Reddit come out of Imgur?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
Anyway, that Imgur photo got 900,000 hits.
Whoa.
I couldn't believe it. And then one other event that we did with Reddit. Did I show you? I don't even know if I did. I show you the meme about the, I think I did, about that's titled Attends Orgo Lecture Dies.
Yes, you did.
Yeah. Anyway, the first time that was done, one of the students told me about it, so they sent it to me. And I thought this was pretty darn funny, but okay. And then I had this guy that I knew pretty well, the chemi, and he said, you should show the students that picture. Mm-hmm. I said, what do you mean? They've all seen it, no doubt. And he says, oh, no, they have not seen it. Mm-hmm. And so I posted it in class, and somebody took a picture of that. And posted it on Reddit.
Oh,
and
man.
It made the front page of Reddit.
That's so awesome.
So it's pretty funny.
Actually, I think someone said that to me before the final for Orgo 1. And I was like, yes, I'm going to die if I study any longer. Yeah, no, I remember that picture. And I was just like, I don't think I ever want to attend a lecture ever again.
You know, it's funny that the guy who's actually sleeping... You can see who he is. Mm-hmm. There's a guy right beside him. You can see who he is. Mm-hmm. And he graduated. They both graduated probably 3 years ago. But when, I don't remember if it happened last time, but a couple years after he had graduated, I showed it to my class because it's so funny. And before I got back to my email that afternoon, he was in the email saying, oh, I see you posted that again. So some people can somehow figure out who he is, and they somehow know him, and they tell him about it.
That's so
He's a very,
funny.
Very good sport about it.
Yeah. No,
I had a T-shirt made up with a picture of that on it, and I wore it to class one day underneath my regular shirt. Mm-hmm. And so I'm teaching along, and at some point, I don't know how I introduced it, but I started taking my shirt off, and I showed him my shirt.
Oh, gosh.
So then I took the T-shirt off, and I gave it to him as a memento.
Oh, that's so perfect.
But we've had some good times doing that.
No, yeah, totally. That's hilarious. I remember we were all just like, oh, goodness. Like, I want to know who it is. You don't have to tell me, but I'm
yeah.
very curious. Who is it? Can you tell me?
Well, you mean, sure, I don't care. Does he care?
Now he's going to be famous.
Hey, Steve Schwartz is his name.
When did he graduate?
Probably 3 years ago. He's very okay with it.
He's very
He
okay.
thought it was pretty funny.
He's famous now.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I never found out who took the picture. I knew people who knew who took the picture. And you can tell where it's taken from in the room, mm-hmm. but I didn't know where they were sitting well enough to figure out who it was. But the guy who told me, you should show them this, I asked him, so do you know who took it? He says, yeah, I know who took it, but I'm not telling.
I don't know if I'd want to be the one who took it, you know, but maybe I would.
Oh, it was hysterical. Yeah. Yeah. Ironically, you haven't seen that, but during one of the review sessions this semester, probably the second mm-hmm. exam review, yeah, it was the second exam review, and we had two exams. So the first exam review was, there's only, 20 kids at the review. Mm-hmm. And we had it in 2:30, Chandler Ullman 2:30, and it was hot in there. And I don't know why I was wearing a jacket or something. Maybe it was that fleece I often wear. And it got really hot, so I took this fleece off, and we were joking around, and I flipped it over my shoulder and said, yeah, I'll do the male model pose.
Oh, gosh.
And I did, and somebody took a picture.
I have to find it.
And so then she makes a meme out of it and sends it to me.
Oh, I need to see
it. And the meme was, Orgo is easy. And to which, of course, on her email, she wrote, it is not easy.
Not easy.
So then they just gave me a framed photograph of that.
That's
meme.
So funny. Oh, my goodness. That's great.
That was pretty good. I'd tell you who that was, but she's pretty shy, so I won't say that.
It's okay. Oh, man. See, Orgo has been like your main course you've taught,
yeah,
though.
Definitely. I've taught, other things like clinical chemistry, and I taught the enzyme mechanisms for years, and I've taught studio, but I've never taught intro chem. I've taught second semester intro, but organics my main thing. Mm-hmm. It's the best class, quite frankly.
I'm not gonna lie.
I mean,
I love it.
It's much more interesting than intro, I think.
This semester I took intro 2 and M2 and Orgo 2. I love Orgo, but it's so hard.
Yeah.
It takes a lot out of your brain, unless like, because you just have to, know it and understand it all. And
right.
That's the hard part.
Yeah, that's the message that is impossible to get across to everybody.
Mm-hmm. It's not something you can memorize or anything. Right. Mm-hmm.
From WLVR Bethlehem and Lehigh University, this is Prof Talk.
So you're retiring now? You're leaving us to some useless professors who I don't even know?
No, they're going to be quite good.
Well, I don't believe it, because they have like a really, it's going to be hard for them to follow you. I'm just being honest.
I'm telling you, I think they're going to be really good.
Well, thankfully, I don't have to take them. Or
that's true.
Or, so I passed?
Barely.
Oh, okay, all right. All right, at least I passed. All right, so what are you going to do next?
What are we going to do next? We are going to, in July, we're going to go down and visit Costa Rica, Colombia, and Ecuador to see about moving there.
So you're like really thinking of moving there?
We are.
What are you going to do there?
We're going to save enough money to help poor people, which we've been doing our whole lives, frankly. But if you stay in this country, pretty much all your money gets spent on yourself.
Fair enough.
I mean, we've been helping people for our whole lives. We're basically do-gooders. My wife worse than me.
Yeah, Miss Peace Corps.
Yeah, exactly.
That's amazing.
She's extremely generous. Mm-hmm. Like, we went to shop for flowers to plant, because I always plant flowers on Mother's Day. And so we got there, and we were going out, and they were locking up. I says, whoa, we just made it. Good thing. And so we're going out to the car, and this guy runs up. Oh, it's locked. So what does my wife do? She gives him some of our flowers.
Oh, that's so nice.
That's the way she is. She's just congenitally generous.
Well, that's pretty awesome that you have.
Anyway, I've gotten burned a few times, and I'm a little frustrated with giving money to people or helping them out when they turn right around and do the same stupid things that got them into this. Mm-hmm. I mean, I've had lots of homeless people in my house. We had this one guy, Jack. My wife just goes around and they're just like, she's a magnet. Boom. My son, who just came back from Japan last night, said, well, it was Mother's Day. Mm-hmm. And in the last year or so, we've had two people living at our house because, you know, their living arrangements fell apart. So my wife knew that. Well, one of them, my wife knew that. So she said, well, why don't you come and live at our house? We had room. Mm-hmm. And then the other one, he had ran into trouble and he knows us for eons. So he said, so do you think I could live at your house? So we did. Anyway, they both came back yesterday. Mm-hmm. So I told her, you know, you should feel honored because these people really think of you as their mother.
That's so amazing.
And I just, to us, well, to me, mm-hmm. You know, they lived our house, no problem. They were no big trouble. No big deal. For them, it's a big deal. And so they came back on Mother's Day.
That's amazing. It's
touching, quite frankly.
That is.
But anyway, she's extremely generous. So we have been working with refugees for the last maybe 15 years. In fact, that's how we got into, not quite how we got into buying houses. My son, my oldest son, had a friend who had a very difficult childhood. Very bad. And so, for example, he became a deadhead, would travel around to all their concerts. He was just wasting his life. But he did get married, had four girls, had long since moved, but somehow we were still in touch with him. So he got into trouble financially. So they came at our house and lived for 6 months.
All six of them?
Yeah. So at some point I said, you know, you guys have been renting your whole lives, and that is not financially a good decision.
No.
You need to buy a house. But of course, their credit rating was in the toilet. So we said, okay, we'll buy you a house, and then you can buy it back from us over time.
Yeah.
What a great idea this was. This is the worst mistake I ever made. Because that family promptly fell apart, and many years later, they just left. We won't even talk about how far behind they were in their rent. I'm a patsy. As the father of this family once told me, you know what the trouble with you is? You're too nice. But anyway, so then we started helping refugees. Mm-hmm. They would come in, and my church was sponsoring a group, a family. And so I found them an apartment to live in, and mm-hmm. I taught them how to drive, which was very scary because they didn't know anything about driving. I would leave to go. The oldest guy, the father, was about 50. Mm-hmm. I don't think they'd ever been in a car. They were from Vietnam, and mm-hmm. he'd spent the last 5 years in a rehabilitation camp. And so I would go out and say, well, dear, I'm going to go out and teach Drew to drive. I may not come back.
Oh, my goodness.
It was scary. But anyway, so we started... So then we would have people coming in. That whenever they come, they land at somebody's house for a couple weeks mm-hmm. because they don't want to pre-rent because you can never tell if they're actually coming. Mm-hmm. Apparently, the system is too chaotic. Mm-hmm. I mean, hey, the government runs it, so yeah.
Obviously.
So we got to know some of them, and so we says, you know, they always get put in Center City, Allentown, which is not a very nice place to be. We should buy houses for them and rent out to them, and we'll just break even. Mm-hmm. And so we have two of those. And generally speaking, those have been really good experiences. Mm-hmm. So I'm a little down on poor Americans because usually there's a reason they're poor. They've mm-hmm. been making really bad decisions. So I'm more interested in this concept of microfinance. Do you know microfinance? It's a guy who won a Nobel Prize for this concept. I think he was Pakistani. I'm not sure. But it's setting up banks to make loans to very small entrepreneurial type people mm-hmm. women, it's primarily women. I think it's like 60-70% women in poor countries, mm-hmm. Who just need like $1,000 to maybe get their, get themselves going. Mm-hmm. And like there's a place called Kiva.org that has this vast network of these kind of microfinance places. Mm-hmm. And so you can, basically you're just loaning them money and then they pay it back. And they have astounding payback rates, which I don't understand how that happens, because all the people I've ever loaned money to, no, you don't get it back. You just have to figure, okay, that's gone. Uh-huh. But I would like to do that. I would like to get myself out of the direct contact with poor people because I'm a patsy. And eventually they find that out.
And they realize they're going to use you for all you got.
Right, right. So anyway, we might, I mean, we couldn't do that very well if we stayed here. So that's my motivation.
So you want to do microfinance in Colombia, Costa Rica,
or
someplace?
Ecuador. My favorite is Ecuador, but I have no reason for that because I've never been there. I've never been to any of those places.
So you just think Ecuador is going to be the best?
Yeah, for some reason, I think that's, I don't, there's no logic. I think it was the first place I started looking at, and that's the only reason. It's cheaper than Costa Rica is, for sure.
Yeah, probably.
Has a little more English than Colombia does.
Yeah.
But I know a couple of former students in Colombia, so definitely have to go there.
That would be cool. Definitely go visit.
But probably not to stay. People think, oh, Colombia, man, it's really dangerous, narc wars and things like that, but they're much better than they used to be.
Yeah. Well, so I have a few personal questions that
personal questions.
No, they're me. They're personal questions for me.
Oh, fire away.
So do you know the TV show Avatar?
I know the movie Avatar. I haven't seen the movie Avatar.
No. So the TV show Avatar is about...
I don't have a TV.
Well...
Although we watch Netflix all the time.
Netflix is very important.
Yeah.
But it's a show about a guy who is the last Avatar. He means that he's able to control and bend all four elements, earth, air, fire, and water.
Chemistry.
Sort of.
Well, Greeks. That comes from the Greeks.
Yeah. So, but then there's other types of benders which only can bend one of the elements. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering, what element would you bend and why? Earth, air, fire, or water?
Yeah, this is coming out of left field. Yeah. Earth, air, fire, and water. So the Avatar can control these things?
The Avatar can control all four.
Yes.
But me and you, we're just regular benders.
Just regular. What do they do with them when they control them?
Shoot them out of their hands. They can, well, that's what fire usually can do. You can manipulate fire, or you can lift pieces of earth out, make water, do crazy things, fly. It's really up to your imagination, but...
I'd say Earth.
Why?
It's got the most... I'm a chemist, so it's got the most stuff you can use. Everything is in the Earth, so if I could control it, for example, I could generate more oxygen. If I were really into climate change, I could sequester carbon dioxide, maybe. Although that at that point is a gas. But you could be much more useful, but I'm not sure that the avatars are being useful. They're just doing battles with people or things.
No, you're definitely gonna have to check out the show.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Is it on Netflix?
I don't know.
How many years has it been around?
Well, it's over now. It's
how many years was it there?
I don't know.
Well, if they've been there a while, they usually are on Netflix.
It might be on Netflix. But I personally would control fire. But when I think of it, I relate it to my personality. So I think of myself as a very fiery person. Usually I'm very direct, a little rough around the edges sometimes.
I did notice that. I was going to say you are spunky maybe. But you are definitely direct. Mm-hmm. I remember the hard time you gave me when I couldn't remember your name.
I was very upset.
She's not shy. She'll tell you what she's thinking.
Oh, yeah, every time. But no, that's how I think of it. I mean, and every element, I feel like you can relate to a personality. So that's why I ask as many people as possible just to see how they define themselves, kind of. I don't know. Maybe that's just me being.
Do they know it? Oh, I see. You mean of these four?
Mm-hmm. Like, a lot of people are water. Mm. You know? I know a lot of waters.
Well, I definitely am an earth. Yeah. I'm very pragmatic.
Yeah. I could see that. Yeah. No. I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Whoa, that's very hip.
Yeah, you know, that's what they call me.
I'm sorry, but that sounds like it came from the 60s.
Yeah, I don't know. I use a lot of weird words. It's a bad habit of mine. Usually I get made fun of, but mostly they're just jealous that I get away with it. So
here's an expression from the 50s, early 60s, and that's, what's the skinny? And apparently that is still around.
What does that mean?
I've met students who know, yeah.
I'm going to try using it now.
Okay.
What's the skinny?
Right.
Professor Trey?
Or now that I'm trying to learn Spanish, it seems like ¿qué tal?
¿Qué tal?
Yeah, like what's happening?
Yeah.
Or as we said back then, sappening, bro.
Sappening.
So, yeah.
Oh, gosh, I'm learning so much.
Very hip.
Oh, gosh, rad. I've been using the word rad.
Oh,
recently.
My gosh, a skater dude.
Yeah, that's me. Deep down, I want to be a skater dude, so I use the word rad a lot. Well, we're almost up.
Wow.
But I want to conclude this interview by asking you to tell the listeners, your previous students, all the students that you haven't had, who wish had you, something that would be beneficial to them that you've learned over the years. But honestly, it's going to be hard to top that Piano Man remake you made because that was oh so impressive. I don't know. It was a very beautiful serenading. Everyone should take a look at that.
You know, I looked at it and I sound terrible.
No, it's beautiful.
And you can't hear the music.
Really?
Because the tape is picking up my mic.
Oh, and they don't pick up like the background.
Right. In fact, I started taping organic. I don't know, 10 years back, I taped it.
Mm-hmm.
But the quality of the tape was so bad. And the people who I got to do the tape, well, when finally one of my tapers fell asleep taping,
oh, goodness.
I said, okay, this isn't working. I used to play it. We didn't have a website. I used to play it on the Lehigh TV channel at 10 o'clock at night. But the quality was just
so bad.
So bad. And so when they got the technology to feed off the microphone, mm-hmm. then that cuts out enormous amounts of the background noise.
True.
But it was cutting out most of the song. So it's kind of just me singing, and it's not that good.
Well, I still must say it was very touching. I absolutely loved it.
When good.
I heard it. But I don't know. I remember... I don't want to like compare you, but you know, remember Dr. Sands, the bio teacher
yeah.
who left?
Yeah, I know him pretty well.
I had
well.
Him, and he left us this last his last class with just this speech that made me want to be a better person. And
wow.
I don't know. The way he talked about it, it made me like feel very motivated to like do things with my life. And I don't know. Like, I don't know. It was just like his like life, like the way he like...
Mm-hmm.
That's like the way he looked at life. And I was like wondering if you have anything to tell us young minds to just how to become successful like you and just be, you know. I don't know if people are around like as present as you are a lot of the time. And that's what I want to learn to be like that. And I was wondering if you have any advice.
Well, I was talking to this is one bit of advice. And I was talking to a student, as a matter of fact, at the undergraduate research symposium. And this is a female student. And I think it's actually more relevant for women than men, sexist that I am. She's really, really awesome student. very dynamic, very involved, clearly a leader, blah, 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 that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about, so what are you doing next? Going to go to grad school or not? And she was expressing a lack of confidence in her ability to compete at the graduate school level. And in this particular case, it was absurd. Mm-hmm. She is totally, totally capable of that. But it's my sexist perspective, reinforced by a lot of conversations with students, that women do not have as much confidence as they should. And men have more confidence than they should, based on their... I'm quite sure that there's evolutionary reasons for this. Mm-hmm. I could tell my wife, well, you know, if men weren't overconfident and cocky SOBs, they wouldn't have gone out and tried to kill a mastodon, for crying out loud. Mm-hmm. And if women weren't cautious, they would have taken those chances, and that would be really deleterious for the tribe. So I think it's built into us, but in this modern era, I think people have to learn to, as they say now, get out of their comfort zone. Just put it out there, and you'll be able to do it. Another expression of that is that when I first started out being a professor, of course, I was, you know, at the bottom of the totem pole. I didn't have much experience. Mm-hmm. You always want to do your best possible job. Mm-hmm. You want to be prepared to the max. I learned you couldn't do that because there was not enough time. And so you had two choices. You could either pull back and not do those things because you just couldn't prepare well enough, or you could just do them and wing it. Mm-hmm. And I've learned that famous professors are winging it.
Yeah,
I mean, they're very talented, but they don't let not being able to plan everything out, they don't let that stop them. They just go for it.
Yeah,
and people have to do that.
Thank you so much coming in to talk to us. I had a great time getting to know you a little better. Well, this is Prof Talk on WLVR Lehigh, a university radio. Thank you, Professor Stray, for coming in, and I hope everyone has a great summer, and thanks again. I can't tell you how much I appreciate you for teaching me organic chemistry and for, you know, giving me a little inside scoop of what Lehigh used to be and what you used to be, or still are, or what it used to be. Oh, you know what I mean.
Yeah, yeah. You're welcome.
You're very rad.
Oh, rad now.
Yeah, very rad.
You've been listening to Prof Talk. To hear all the interviews and check out extended material, log on to our archives at WLVR.org.